Brewers Publications is pleased to present their newest title from Stan Hieronymus, Brewing Local American-Grown Beer. Written for homebrewers with a sense of adventure, Brewing Local is all about using cultivated and foraged ingredients in your beer. For those who are ready to go beyond pumpkin beer and start making beer with lesser-known ingredients like pawpaws and cow parsnip, Brewing Local is a must-have guide. Learn more at brewerspublications.com. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, October 20th, 2016. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Chris Colby, editor of Beer and Wine Journal and author of the Homebrew Recipe Bible, joins us to give his tips on brewing cream ales for competition. What's the best way to get judges' attention when brewing this lightly flavored ale? And you might get some extra tips on brewing any kind of style of beer for competition. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener. And don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Lots of you do it. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first and go to basicbrewing.com. Click on our ad on the right-hand side of the page. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show. We greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows Phone app. We're on the BlackBerry Podcast Directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. We're also on Google Play Music and, most recently, on the iHeartRadio app. So there's no excuse to listen to us wherever you are. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support, and thanks to everybody who's done so already. And I still send out an email with links to those bonus videos that we've done over the past 3 years to those who give to the tip jar, so we greatly appreciate that. In my own brewing news here, yesterday I kegged my 5-gallon batch of cream ale, appropriate for this episode. I don't know how it would do in a competition, but it tasted really good to me. So I can't wait for that to be ready. That was an all-grain batch, and the day, and I'll give the recipe for that in the interview in this show. And the day before, I bottled a 5-gallon batch, or what turned out to be a 6-gallon batch of my 15-minute pale ale. It's been a while since I brewed that one, and since I only boiled for 15 minutes and I used liquid extract instead of a dry this time, I miscalculated my starting volume and wound up with too much beer, which is good news, in that I've got, an extra gallon of beer that will still be very tasty. Boy, it tasted good going into the bottle. The bad news is, of course, that it's only going to be about 3.8% ABV. Because of the extra water in there. But I'm thinking, maybe that's good news. As you know, I've been consciously, dialing in my recipes to be lower in alcohol. So I'm cutting back on alcohol consumption, and I'm trying to cut calories. So I'll put that in the positive accident column there. Both of those beers, I'm really happy with the way they turned out. And I'm excited to have that much beer on hand. I wound up with the 51 bottles of that pale ale, and I posted a picture of my bottles on our Facebook page on Twitter. And somebody asked, where did you get those cool caps? And I just used plain crown caps and wrote pale ale on each of them with a Sharpie. It wasn't a big deal, just took a couple of minutes. I'm surprised because usually my penmanship is pretty crappy, but those look pretty good. You could actually read what they said. A lot of people hate bottling, but I still kind of like it. you know, I'm just not. I like kegging as well, but there's some downsides to that, along with the positives. I always like to have at least one beer on tap, but I like to bottle as well. And I have a system down where I can clean bottles in a short period of time. And you know, I usually try to wash bottles as I use them. You know, like one or two or three at a time, whatever. Just wash them with the dishes every day. But lately, they've been piling up. And the other day, I washed and delabeled a case and a half of bottles. And it took me less than an hour to do that. And only six or eight of them didn't have labels. So, you know, I've got my method down. I get my 70s rock Pandora channel going, and that clears everybody out of the room. And I get my assembly line style, you know, bottle cleaning and delabeling thing going on. And before I know it, all the bottles are on the bottle tree, drying and ready to be put away. So I posted on Twitter the quote that I use when I'm talking about homebrewing to people who haven't homebrewed. I always tell them, if you like washing dishes, you'll love homebrewing. And that's pretty much my theory, and I embrace it. you might as well. A lot of folks, you know, I know a lot of folks soak bottles in a big tub of PBW solution overnight to loosen the labels. But by the time you do all that, it seems like it would be a wash, so to speak, between that method and my method. With my method, it just takes, you know, just a short period of time to deal with all those bottles, and it's done. And but with the soaking thing, you have to run the water, you have to get the solution, you have to put the bottles all in there, make sure that the air is out of them, and then let them sit. And then you got to come back later and like, I got to deal with those bottles. So I understand everybody has their different way of doing it, and I'm sure that I'll get emails about about how I'm doing it wrong. But anyway, I think, you know, bottling is not that big of a deal for me, especially with small batches. You can't really keg. Well, you can. I mean, they make small kegs. But if you're making like a 2 gallon batch or something, it just makes more sense just to bottle it for me. And that way you can share as well. Different strokes for different folks. Now let's talk about Desiree and Dave and their family-owned and run homebrew shop, High Gravity in Tulsa. When you walk in there, you might see Dave's daughter Amanda up front, you know, taking care of customers and filling orders. And Desiree's probably going to be in the back in the office at the computer, you know, steering the ship, making sure everything's running smoothly. And Dave is usually elbow deep in gear in his shop, putting together electric brewing kits. And you know, they're our family, doing what they love and providing an essential service to homebrewers locally and at a long distance. So if you want to support them, be sure to check out their extensive line of electric brewing equipment, including the new Warthog EBC-130 electric brewery controller. It's a whole new animal, they say. This is the newest EBC with automatic temperature control, linear power control, timer functions, and a pump control. It has a mash mode and a boil mode. Great for Herms or Rims systems. You can control a 1, 2, or 3 vessel system, up to 1 barrel. And so that's cool. You can check out the Warthog and all the rest of the great gear at highgravitybrew.com. Highgravitybrew.com, a family-owned and run organization. That's let's talk to Chris Colby, who's just judged a round of cream ales and has written an article about it on beerandwinejournal.com. And we get his tips based on what grabbed his attention of that flight of beers. Chris Colby, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me on the show.
We're going to talk about competition cream ales. We've talked about my cream ale recipe on the show before, but is there a difference for you, if you're brewing for yourself and if you're brewing for a competition, do you change the recipes for one purpose or the other?
I would if I entered contests with the desire to win them. You know, I think I mostly, when I brew the beer I like. And you know, I used to enter contests, and I at least stuck halfway with the style guidelines, you know, in those cases. But I mean, I never really got into contests to the degree that I was like, yeah, there's those people who brew frequently, and they know when the contests are, and they plot it all out. And yeah, if I was doing that and it, with the desire to like rack up a bunch of medals, yeah, I would brew differently most beers than I do.
How so? I mean, what would be your strategy in trying to get the judges' attention?
Well, that's a big thing. One thing, when you think about brewing a beer for yourself, you know, you think of the ways, you know, you're probably going to be brewing a style you already like, so you're already in the ballpark of what you want. And then you tweak that to your desire. You know, do you like things a little hoppier than usual, you know, per style, or less? Do you like a little dry, you know, a drier or a little sweeter and fuller body? Do you like it, you know, do you like a little bit more sort of specialty malt flavor, or do you like to have that, you know, be, you know, everyone makes those decisions for how they like it. But in a contest, what you need to think about is your beer is going to be tasted with, you know, an unknown number of other beers, you know, in a flight where they're all the same thing. Like if you brew a Scottish 70 shilling ale, you know, which they've changed I think they call it a Scottish heavy now in the BJCP guidelines, but you know, or whatever, you brew a cream ale, which is the topic for today, your beer is going to be tasted alongside several other cream ales. So what you like personally when you're sitting around after mowing the lawn or whatever in a cream ale, that's not necessarily going to make your beer stand out in a crowd. So, I mean, that's, if I was going to start brewing for a contest, or if I was talking to someone who, like, that was their thing, I would say is imagine brew your beer knowing that it's got to stand out in a crowd of similar beers.
And especially with something as kind of lightly flavored or delicately flavored or whatever, this is not an intense style, this cream ale. If you try to stick exactly to the style guidelines, is that the approach, or do you want to make something that's just a little out of spec just to get their attention?
Well, that's one thing you can do in some styles. Some styles you can get, you know, you can garner some attention just by adding more of whatever it is. You know, if it's a barley wine, make it a little, you know, make it as big as possible. If it's a double IPA or even an IPA, make it as hoppy as possible. Or, you know, even on a pale ale, make it hoppier than a pale ale should be. With some other more balanced, you know, lower gravity ales, you can't really just pour it all on and expect to do well, because some of the judges are going to at some point say, you know, yeah, this is not it within the style parameters. Like, I remember I judged a flight of what were supposed to be dry stouts in one contest, and I came across something that was clearly like a foreign export stout, or a very, very big stout. And, you know, the first thing the other said, judge says, wow, this has got a bunch of flavor. And I said, yeah, it's because it's, you know, four times as big as like a dry stout should be. Yeah, you know, and, you know, so sometimes you can get away with, you know, just making it bigger or hoppier. And, you know, depending on the savvy of the judges, you might get away with it. But most of the time, I think, you know, going a little bit over style guidelines, especially on the key points, might do you well, but you don't want to go too far. Like, I think of it, a good contest beer is like a caricature of that style rather than like a photograph or a painting, you know, or like a good painting. You know, it's like because you know, you're not sitting there drinking it. The judges, you know, aren't going to be, you know, sitting there drinking and appreciate it for what it is. They've got, you know, six or seven beers or whatever to, and they're going to take two sips of it, and they've got the style guidelines in front of them, or they should, or have read them recently. And, you know, there's the high points of the style they're looking for. And, you know, your beer in a contest just has to be firing on those guidelines that, you know, the judges are looking for. And that's, and knowing what those are is partially reading the BJCP guidelines, but also knowing, like, having gone to judge contests and knowing what people look for, which probably varies from, you know, contest to contest and club to club and stuff like that. But,
and cream ale is a pretty approachable style. I've got a batch of it that I'm going to keg tomorrow, in fact. I had to, someone who I would classify as a sort of craft beer rookie, came up to me, and said, you know, I like your cream ale. And I said, well, thanks. And he said, well, you know, most of your beers I can't stand, but I like that cream ale. And nice. I said, I gritted my teeth and I said, thank you. So it is kind of a gateway beer into better beers, but it does have some character of its own, and you know, if it's done well, it's a pretty good drinking beer, and it's got some nice flavors that, you know, that you can appreciate. So describe your ideal of the style, or what the style guidelines are shooting for.
Yeah, if you're shooting for a cream ale that you want to enter into a contest, you know, you've got to realize that it's not a very strong beer, so you can't really make it too much stronger and have it still, you know, fall within style guidelines. It's not that malty, really, so you can't just pour on, like, you know, dark Munich malt and make it a lot more maltier, or add any specialty grains to intensify any of those flavors. It's not really hoppy, so you can't just load on the hops. You've sort of got to take what flavors are there and sort of push them all to the limits of the style, but not exceed it, you know, to the point where they, you know, you're disqualified, essentially, you know. So you want to get, you know, you've got base malt in there, the usual malts that people use in a cream ale are six row, or sometimes a blend of six row and two row, you know, US based malts. You've got some sort of adjunct in there, which could be corn grits or it can be corn, and you've got, you know, your hops, which are, you know, it's not a very hoppy style at all, but yet, I mean, if they're completely gone, it becomes too sweet. Mm-hmm. And then finally you've got your yeast strain, which is not, you know, it's not something that produces like a lot of character. You know, it's not like a wheat beer or a Belgian beer or even an estuary type of English ale. It's generally a very clean lager yeast, or I'm sorry, clean ale yeast that's used. Or occasionally you can also use lager yeast for the style.
I like to refer to cream ale as kind of like the poor man's pilsner, you know, where it's a pilsner well done is very nice and has some nice, you know, kind of grainy characters and has a Christmas from the hops, but it's a lager, so it takes a bit of extra work to do. Has a little more finesse, whereas the cream ale, you know, is sort of similar. It's kind of like a cousin, but less refined, I'd say. It was interesting in Stan Hieronymus's book, Brewing Local. He talked about cream ales and Kentucky Commons and things like that. And he talked about beers that were using six row and corn together. And he was basically saying that the corn helped to bring characteristics to the beer that made the six row more palatable. And so you know, maybe there's maybe this is going on in this here, where if you do use, I just use a 2-row in mine, but if you use a 6-row, maybe it's important that you use an adjunct like, you know, corn to kind of help round that out a bit.
Yeah. The reason that North American brewers started using corn in their beers obviously was due to availability. You know, it's grown a lot here. And when they did that, though, corn isn't typically malted, or at least not successfully at large commercial scale. So, you know, they needed a malt with a lot of diastatic power to convert it. So, I mean, the usual reason given for beers that pair corn and 6-row malt is that corn has no enzymes in it. It's got a lot of starch, but not sufficient enzymes to convert itself, whereas the 6-row has, a gross excess of enzymes. So, you know, in a beer made with – if 6-row is your only malt – You can easily add 30, sometimes 40% corn to it, corn grits, and have that convert. So, you know, and the I haven't read that book yet by Stan, but the idea that the flavors complement themselves, there might be something to that too. I mean, I tend to think in a cream ale, getting a blend of 6-row and 2-row is good because if you use a good quality 2-row, that's like a good base beer for any light colored ale. 6-row is a little bit huskier, and given that you've got this beer that doesn't have, you know, doesn't have especially malts in it, that gives it just a little bit of a grainy flavor to the beer, and that could be a good thing.
So what's the balance? I mean, if you are mixing 2-row and 6-row and an adjunct like corn, what's the balance?
You've got a wide sort of window to shoot for. The amount of corn in the grain bill is usually right around 20%, because lower than that and there's no point in adding it, and higher than that it gets too corny, essentially. But the remaining, 80% of the grain bill, it can be 100% 6-row if you want it, or it can be, you know, a lot less. I a lot of times, just for simplicity's sake, I split it 50-50, 2-row, 6-row. But, I mean, I haven't made, like, a series of beers at different percentages and, you know, figured out which best. I just tried that. It seemed to work. And, you know, I think, like I said before, I think the 2-row, a good U.S. 2-row malt, gives it that clean, basic beer malt flavor. And then 6-row is similar, but just a little huskier. And if you run your wort collection right, get the right amount of grain out of it without astringency, that really helps in a cream ale, because you need – given that you've only got base malts in there and no other strongly flavored malts, you need to get the most you can out of those to make the beer as good as it can.
My recipe is simple. It's just 10 pounds of 2-row, 1 pound of flaked maize, a couple ounces of Sots hops at 60 minutes, and then 1 ounce at flame out, and then USO5 yeast. It's just a nice, drinkable, tasty beer. It does have a little bit of corn in it, just a teeny bit of corn flavor, but I like that. And sort of the same way that in a Pilsner, a bit of corny flavor, a bit of DMS character is acceptable, and you know, part of the style. I kind of like that little bit of corn flavor. I don't like a lot of it. This is a recipe balanced for my taste. Since we're using corn, I use flaked maize, which is corn that's passed through a roller essentially and sort of pre-gelatinized, so it can go right into the mash without a cereal mash. But is that the only option?
Flaked maize is a very convenient option because all you need to do is stir it right into your mash. If you do a single infusion mash, the enough of the starches in the flake maize have already been gelatinized so that the enzymes can get at it and you're fine. And flake maize also gives you a little bit of corn flavor. If you're wanting to have a little bit more corn flavor in your cream ale, and this could be a good thing in a contest because most of the brewers are going to use flake maize for convenience. If you use corn grits, brewer's corn grits, and do a small cereal mash, that's going to give you a little bit more corn flavor, and that's going to help, in a contest, that's going to help your beer stand out in the crowd. Also, if you just at home, if that's really what you want, that would be the way to go, to use corn grits.
And with grits, you've got to do a cereal mash, right?
Yeah. You need to use degerminated grits for one thing, because otherwise there's too much oil in the germ. And you need to, you need to cook the grits along with a handful of malt, or, at a 5 gallon scale, it's about a handful of malt. Just to boil that'll gelatinize the starches. And then you, stir that into your main mash, which you're likely going to have mashed in low, say, somewhere in the 140 to 145 range. And then you stir in your cereal mash, which, depending on the thickness of the two different mashes and then blah, 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 it's going to bring you up to somewhere in the saccharification range. So, a cereal mash is needed with grits. So it's a little bit longer brew day, but it pays off if you're looking for more corn character in your beer.
And talk about hops. I mean, this is not about hops, but there is a crispness, a bitterness crispness that you need to have to balance the malt bill.
Yeah, even with it not being a strong beer, and even with it, it's generally a fairly well attenuated beer. Although, given the relatively low starting gravity, you don't have to go nuts on the attenuation. But it's generally, it's at least fairly well attenuated. So you want a little bit of hops in there to balance out any remaining sweetness in the beer. The flight that I judged recently, actually, there was only a couple that had where the hops were sort of near the higher end of the spectrum. And there weren't any that were over. But like, the BJCP gives, I think it's 8 to 20 IBUs is the range there. And so 8 is like almost undetectable. And 20 is like, I'm trying to think of a good example. 20 is a lot of like wheat beers. German Hefeweizens would be right around there. 20 or a lot of German lagers that aren't the hop focused ones are right around 20, so just enough for balance. And one thing I'd also say, if you're brewing, given that's a fairly small range, and the balance is kind of critical here. One thing to be aware of is that hops lose alpha acids over time. So if you're brewing a beer like this and it's near, it's approaching harvest season and the hops you're using are a year old, keep in mind that they might have lost, depending on how you store them, they might have lost a significant amount of their alpha acids, and you might actually end up having to add a little bit more to get the right amount of hopping. And in a contest beer, I would definitely hop it towards the higher level. Because at 20, 20 is the higher level, so if it's a contest, maybe up to 25, sneak it up there. But I wouldn't go too much. But anyway, that's, even if you go all the way up to 25, that's not like an insanely hoppy beer. That's not like, the judges are going to go, oh, that's out of range, or they're unlikely to say that. But that'll be balanced, because otherwise the corness aspect of it can make the beer seem a little bit sweeter than it is, even if it's fairly well attenuated.
You would think that since the corn is, wouldn't the corn sort of dry out the style a bit as far as the finishing gravity?
No, because it's the the starches from the corn get digested by the enzymes from the malt, and so it should be, you know, it should just depend on how your mash worked. If you did with flaked maize, a single infusion mash, then, you know, if you mashed high, it's going to finish with a fairly high gravity. If you mash, you know, lower in the saccharification range, it's going to finish a little bit drier. And if you do a cereal mash, you know, that tends to make a very dry beer because you rest the main mash at a lower, you know, level where beta amylase is very effective. And then you bump it up by pouring the cooked cereal in and stirring it in. And that bumps you up to the point where, you know, alpha and beta amylase work good together.
And we haven't talked about original gravity guidelines or ABV targets.
Right. I'd have to go look at the guidelines for the exact numbers, but generally you can think of a cream ale as it overlaps the range for American Pilsner, but at the top end it goes a little bit over. And you know, like you were saying earlier, cream ale is a little bit like an unrefined American Pilsner. It's good to think of it that way. And when you brew it, like brew it towards the top, if you're going to do for a contest, brew it to the top end of the style guidelines or slightly over. You know, don't go nuts, but slightly over. And that makes, you know, you at least get as much malt and corn, you know, into there. And if you pull enough out of the ingredients and it's just slightly, you know, if it's the biggest, you know, either tied for or the biggest beer in the flight, it's going to stand out a little, you know, and again, as long as you haven't overdone it, that's going to be good for a contest.
And the one thing that a lot of times we don't address, but what about carbonation? When you're judging against a flight of these beers, a little higher carbonation might make the beer a little brighter?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, cream ale is a beer that's meant to be fizzy, for starters, so you want that. And then also, I don't know, but from the last couple of years, the contests I've been judging at, it seems like there's a lot of undercarbonated beers. And I'm not sure why that is. A suspicion, because I tend to look at which bottles are, I'll look at the bottom of the bottle to see before we pour if it's bottle carbonated, you know, or bottle conditioned, or you know, if there's no sediment, so it's been filled out of a keg. And it seems like most of the uncarbonated or lower carbonated ones don't have sediment, so people are filling them out of a keg. And I'm wondering if they're either quick filling them, you know, they're not using a counter pressure filler or a beer gun or something, or just trying to sort of quickly fill it. And so I'd say definitely in a contest, carbonation is going to work to your favor. For one thing, it's going to bring out, it's not a tremendously flavorful beer to start with. So getting some carbonation to make a nice bit of foam is going to bring out whatever flavors you do have in the aroma, especially the corn, if it's there. And secondarily, if for some reason it's a trend right now to undercarbonate the beers you send to contest, having enough carbonation in there is going to help you stand out. Like one thing I sort of couldn't believe is that of the whole flight we had, there was almost none of the beers had enough carbonation or enough foam. I mean, that's another thing. Just if you put enough carbonation in there, you're going to raise enough foam that, you know, you're going to pick up a half of a point on, you know, appearance. So, yeah, I would definitely say, you know, not only because just the style is supposed to be highly carbonated, but certainly for a contest beer, you're just leaving points on the, you know, on the table if you don't carbonate it to at least to the level that it's supposed to be, if not very slightly over.
And for those of you keeping score, that's our cat cameo for the week, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
There's people with bingo cards.
Yeah, if you're playing bingo, that was Mrs. Blick. I don't know if she's made an appearance yet.
And we mentioned yeast briefly. It is an ale, so an ale yeast, and we're not looking for yeast character. So I use USO5, just because it's easy and handy. But I'm assuming that anything along the the California ale range would be good.
Yeah, I mean, and when I bring one for myself, I use White Labs WLP 001 or Y Yeast 1056, which those are all the Chico quote unquote strain, and those those will work well. The thing is, one thing I would consider if I was brewing a contest beer though is pretty much every cream ale in the flight is going to be brewed with those.
Mm.
So one thing you might want to consider is picking some other kind of yeast with just a little bit of estuary character. Not a lot. It definitely needs to be a clean flavored beer, or clean aroma. If you made one and it had like the esters, like in a full on British style beer, that would be inappropriate. But just taking some other reasonably clean British beer and just maybe bump your pitching rate up a little bit so that you tamp down on the ester production. That might be a good, I haven't tested it, but that might be a good strategy for making a beer like this stand out in a crowd.
Hmm. And if you're an extract brewer, are you completely out of luck?
You're at a disadvantage. I wouldn't say completely out of luck. I mean, the thing is, extract, let's say you get really, really fresh malt extract. Okay, that's good. But the one thing about malt extract is that, it's wort that's then been condensed into malt extract, and they've boiled off a lot of the water. But what goes along with that is some of the aromatic compounds from the malt. So you're losing some, malt aroma, which is why if you've ever had a beer that was made, entirely from malt extract, it sometimes has, a little bit of, it's not the malt aroma is completely absent, but it's just harder, it's just less.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're making an extract cream ale, you want to sort of replace some of that. And what I would do is do a partial mash with, either 6-row or a blend of 6-row and 2-row, which is sort of heavy on the 6-row. Make some wort from a partial mash that way. And then you're sort of back in business.
And then you've got to do that anyway if you want to use corn. You can't just do a straight extract beer and steep corn in it. That's not
if you
work.
If you went straight extract, you'd have to use like corn sugar or something for that portion. But then that has no corn flavor to it. That's just pure sugar. I mean, you can make a beer like that, and it turns out dry and crisp and nice, but it's not going to compete in a contest well.
Yeah, I'd be afraid
as a cream ale.
I'd be afraid it'd be more cidery than cream ale-y. I could be wrong.
Yeah, it would just be really dry, really. I've done it. Yeah. it makes like a beer that like if you, like back when I used to actually run and exercise, like afterwards, that would be a great beer because it's just thin and fizzy. And, you don't, when you're exercise or after you mow the lawn or do some work in the garden or something, you don't want to, like a barrel-aged bourbon, stout. You want something nice and refreshing, and that sort of beer would be great. But submitted as a, contest beer, it would be like, this is thin and watery.
And what publication could we find a cream ale recipe in?
That's a good question. I wonder, if anyone has wrote some sort of recipe compendium, possibly, available by searching for my name at either Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I bet there's a book out there called the Homebrew Recipe Bible. There is a cream ale recipe in there that does like exactly everything I told you not to do in this episode. No, it's mine. It's 2-row and 6-row. Actually, I told you that. It's flaked maize, which I sort of told you not to do, like if you wanted the corn. And then it's Y Yeast 1056 or WLP. And that makes a great beer. It's just I wouldn't submit it to a contest. I wouldn't submit it to a contest thinking that it had a really good chance of winning. You know, it if you brewed it well, you know, it sort of depends on what other people have submitted.
It's a good beer to keep at home.
Yeah, it's a beer brewed for people who want to drink that style of beer and have something. You know, it tastes like a cream ale. It is a cream ale. It's just not, you know, like a contest competitive cream ale. So it's like a cream ale on a tiny amount of steroids. Not a lot of steroids. Just like enough to make it sort of a bigger cream ale.
And I saw the other day that you posted that that your book, the Homebrew Recipe Bible, was back on the top of the new beer release book list on Amazon, which good congratulations on that. And then you also sent me a photo of Booberry, Frankenberry, and Count Chocula. So, you know, my recipe is in there with the Frankenberry Weiss. So now is the time, if you want to brew that recipe, head to the store and look for those cereals. I looked yesterday in my local store here in town and didn't see them. I guess I'm going to have to go to the big Walmart and see if I can find it there.
Yeah, they're out. I also noticed cranberries are out. So I'm going to hopefully be brewing my cranberry zinger recipe because I like that for Thanksgiving.
Awesome. Well, all righty, sir. I appreciate it. It was fun to talk to you again.
It's always great.
Thanks, Chris.
See you later.
Well, thanks again to Chris. You can check out his article on beerandwinejournal.com and find his homebrew recipe Bible on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, etc. I got to get me some Count Chocula before it's gone. It seems like I always wait too late and everybody's grabbed up the Halloween cereals. So I want to brew a Count Chocula stout. So wish me luck on that. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcast. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our log books, where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull Adult Hat and Whip Set, Brown, One Size, and Mustafa Harissa Mediterranean Hot Sauce. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.